Now, if Joe Biden hadn't flunked his debate with Donald Trump, Kamala Harris probably wouldn't be in this position. But last night, she formally became the Democrats' candidate for the US presidency and promised a new way forward. She also excoriated her Republican rival, Donald Trump, depicting him as a dangerous figure who's overly fond of the flattery of tyrants. Brett Bruen was director of global engagement at the White House during the Obama presidency, among other things. He now teaches at UCD's Clinton Institute, and he's with us this afternoon. Good afternoon.
Great to be with you.
What did Kamala Harris have to do last night? And did she do it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I don't think she had to do that much. There was so much enthusiasm over the last several of weeks, and indeed the last several days. It almost reached a fever pitch. And so my hope was she simply got over the bar, and yet she seems to have done almost an Olympic move and scaled that bar with such extraordinary performance that I think she's set herself up strongly for September. We've got 75 days to go, and she's, quite frankly, in a very enviable position.
Will there now, though, be more pressure on her to outline her policies and ambitions, to get specific?
You know, it's interesting because we've almost given her a pass when it comes to a lot of those specific policy proposals, partially because she did not have to go through the primary. She did not have to contrast her agenda with that of other Democrats. She can embrace a lot of the Biden agenda, and I think that's what you're going to see from her, the positive aspects of the agenda, the infrastructure bill, some of the strong work that's been done to repair relations with foreign allies like Ireland. And yet, on the other hand, you will see policy speeches, a bit like we saw last week with her economic proposals, but it's not going to be the in-depth proposal because she is going to try, to the extent possible, to avoid creating some level of division, some fractions within her coalition. So I think she will try to get as far as she can without having to commit to doctrines or to major new policies.
She did speak about Israel and Gaza last night, but did she say anything to set herself apart from Joe Biden?
I think she did. I think she went farther when emphasizing that a ceasefire now is necessary. I think she spoke also to, in more direct terms, to how unacceptable what we have seen transpire over nearly the last 10 months or so is for her. And she has this advantage in that she is able to detach herself from the foreign policy, particularly the policy of the Biden administration with respect to Israel. And yet you heard her, and this was an important point, reinforce that the U.S. commitment under her presidency would remain rock solid and that she saw Iran as a major threat. So she's going to try to thread that needle delicately. I think it's also important to know that there were not as many protesters and that the protests were not as significant, were not as emotionally tinged as they certainly could have been. And that is due, I believe, to the way in which she's diffused the potency of this issue within the Democratic Party.
When it comes to Donald Trump, her opponent, how much of a balancing act does she have to perform? I mean, how much attention should she pay him?
You know, I think she's tried to put forward, and with a fair degree of success, almost the happy warrior image. And, you know, she has been able to strike some strong punches in contrasting herself as a prosecutor. He is a convicted felon. You saw a lot of that also last night where, you know, she wears a smile. She presents it in a more pleasant way. And yet at the same time, she's hitting him hard. And Trump has not found a punch that will land politically against her. And that is why he has seemed so rudderless. He seems truly to be struggling to recalibrate his message and his campaign.
Those who support him, though, would say that at this stage in the 2016 campaign, he was being written off. He was behind in the polls. He was being written off right up until polling day, but he won.
And you see the small little gentleman on my shoulder, and that is the worry that many Democrats have whispering in our ears of remember 2016, even remember 2020. We thought that it was in the bag. We thought that we were going to win in a landslide. And yet the challenge with Trump is so many of his supporters have not always been willing to tell the pollster, have not always shown up in the data that we are getting from traditional political consultants. And yet, and I think this is important for Irish listeners to take into account, there does seem to be what I described a couple of years ago as, you know, making Trump look stale, making him look pathetic. And Harris and Governor Tim Walz have been able to tar and feather him politically in a fashion that just was not even under Barack Obama possible. So I think for the first time in 12 years, Democrats have finally found their stride when it comes to putting Donald Trump on the defense.
But when it comes to two important issues, the economy and immigration, and we know that they matter a great deal to voters, Donald Trump still has higher approval ratings.
He does, though those numbers have started to shift. And I think particularly Kamala Harris is a moderate Democrat, despite Trump's attempts to paint her as a radical communist. And what she has already indicated in some of her remarks and in the brief interview she's given is I think she'll actually be even more pro-business, more pro-economic growth than Joe Biden was. Biden had a very populist, very labor-focused policy. I think Harris will continue some of that, but she is also going to embrace more of Silicon Valley. She's going to embrace more of Wall Street. And she comes from, let's remember, she is a product of the San Francisco Bay Area. So many of her close friends come from that world. And I know several of them, and I think they believe her to be a strong business leader for the U.S.
You mentioned him a few moments ago. How important to her campaign is her vice presidential pick, Tim Walz?
You know, it was questioned by a lot of observers because his name did not pop to the top of the list. And yet, what he has been able to do so remarkably is to win over those Midwestern voters that we need in Wisconsin, in Michigan, even in places like Pennsylvania, and to bring that folksy charm. And quite frankly, he's the anti-Washington candidate. He doesn't speak like a Washingtonian who is rattling off policy.
And for as long as I can remember, every single election, there has been this call from the voters that they want fewer Washington outsiders, or insiders rather. Is he really an outsider?
I think you can count him a outsider. He served 12 years in Congress, and yet he served in Congress from the state of Minnesota. He was elected governor after that. So, you know, when we're looking at options of Washington insider versus Washington outsider, I think he's more outsider than he is insider. The other point to bear in mind is we have seen some of those outsider candidates like Sarah Palin, the former governor of Alaska, who didn't have any notion of what was required on the national stage, of what was required to be a vice president or let alone a president. I think Tim Walz does come with a lot more of that. And yet, as we witnessed in the convention speech this week, he just has this way of cutting through a lot of the noise and hitting Trump, hitting some of the Republican opponents quite hard.
Brett Bruin, thank you very much for being with us on the News at One this afternoon.